Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's John, Bam Bam the Dog. First, on behalf of both of us and everybody from the Real Ones team, I just want to sincerely thank you guys for tuning in. The folks that I bring on the show, they're family to me, and being able to tell their stories and bringing you into their world is something I'm just super proud of, and again, grateful that you guys tune in. We've decided we want to take things just a step further. We're going to introduce a Patreon community. And basically what that means is if you become part of this community, look, I already bored Bam Bam. If you want to become a part of this community, you're going to be able to hear episodes early and all that, ad-free and all that good stuff. But there's all this behind-the-scenes footage, all this stuff that we've shot that really brings you into the folks that we've had on the show, really brings you into their world. You're going to be able to do live chats with me and the folks that I bring on the show to talk about their world, talk about the issues that they're dealing with, about their triumphs and their tragedies. Just go to Patreon/RealOnes. This whole idea was something about building bridges and bringing people together and bringing folks that often don't get the mic and giving the mic to them. So the fact that you guys tune in means the world. Anyways, again, thank you. Be good to each other out there. Rock and roll. Is it cool if you ask Dennis to stop talking? I know that's like a hard thing. Dennis just has it. It's just like that's his kind of his deal. It never stops.
Stops talking.
It never. Yeah. It's a little bit true. We love Dennis.
I love this whole crew. The energy
it's the best.
Here is really popping.
I love you, and I appreciate you coming here. And like you know, like I said, we don't do celebrities or anything like that. We do, you know, just real ones, real motherfuckers.
That's why I love listening to the podcast, is because I want to listen to real ones, and it's like a relief from the endless landscape of conversations about like everything from people. Like, I feel like everyone's having a conversation about a conversation about a conversation about themselves. And so the fact that you can listen to this and just like remember that like we're dealing with a world of intersecting issues that everyone is experiencing differently, and then hear a dialogue about it with someone who has empathy is beautiful.
An experience, right? Like people who have, and yeah. I think that's it. I mean, I think like a lot of the stuff I want to, I think talk to you about today is firstly, I guess like I want to talk a little bit about expectations, and I was thinking about that with you. Like, do you feel like when you go into a conversation in real life with somebody, like all the time, there's always some sort of expectation about how you are, who you are?
Well, that's a really great question. It's funny because last night I was sitting at dinner with some friends, and you know, it's not like I get people come up to me all the time. Like, I look like every other 36-year-old squat white woman in the world. So it's like, it's not like I'm being sort of like picked out of a crowd by adoring fans, but sometimes people recognize me. And oftentimes those conversations involve someone sharing something like incredibly personal that maybe intersects with something that I've experienced, possibly crying. And so it's like it's always so interesting to have those conversations and then just like return to the conversation that's happening at the dinner table. So someone came up to me last night and she was sharing the fact that she had been hospitalized for mental health issues. She was talking about that. At the same time, her girlfriend was like, my cousin went to camp with you and has a painting that she did of you in her bunk. And I was like, this is a lot to process in
like
one.
I'm eating dinner. Yeah.
This is like a lot to process. And I was actually thinking about you because I was thinking about the way like everyone has a way that people react to them, and you have a way that people react to you. It's actually like kind of different than who you are.
How so?
And I mean, it's either like a woman screaming and throwing an undergarment at you, or you're like, cut that out.
I told you one fucking story. That is not a regular story, but go ahead.
I know it's happened multiple times.
Oh,
or
shit.
It's like a man being like, my dude, like my dude, the Punisher or whatever. And it's like, neither of those people is who you are. You're like, I mean, you have obviously like you contain multitudes. Your house has many mansions, to quote Edna St. Vincent Millay. But like you are also like an incredibly like tender, soft-spoken person with a massive interior life. And so it must be interesting for you to have to like deal with those expectations and figure out how you're going to react in a way that like doesn't make you feel like you're stepping outside yourself all the time.
Is there something that you feel like you need to defy the expectation, or do you need to play against it or play towards it, or do you really strive for just kind of being where you are while you're there, and what's your outlook?
I used to, and I love when people are like, you and John Bernthal are close friends, and I'm like, you know, like, I know that it doesn't make sense if you're comparing our bodies of work, but if you were to compare our inner lives, and that's the thing that I feel like this show touches on is that, like, the thing that connects people isn't necessarily how they project to the world. It's, like, absolutely, how they feel. And, like, people would be surprised to know that, like, you and I actually respond to certain kinds of interpersonal situations in the same way. We have shared value system. Like, and that's what makes a friend. And I think when I was younger, especially when Girls was on, I used to feel like I either had to prove to people that I wasn't that character and that I had, like, a level of adult maturity and polish that she didn't, because I think especially when you're a woman playing someone on TV, people conflate your two identities so intensely, although you know what it's like to have your identity conflated with someone. Or I would feel like I had to come in and be this, like, really bawdy, funny, like, girl who could, like, handle the sex stories and didn't get tripped out and could deal with the boys' club. And, like, and I realized, like, neither of those things were me.
Right.
And it took some time away from playing that character and some time just away from public life for me to do the thing that you're talking about, which is just go into a conversation being the most present, authentic version of myself that's reacting to someone in a way that's hopefully empathic and genuine, and also being true to my own needs, my own boundaries, my own sense of myself. But that was, like, a lot of work and is something that I have to pay attention to every single day.
You know, watching Girls and being such a big fan of Girls coming up as, like, a young man, I think to be able to go into your work with, like, real reckless abandonment and to be able to get not to be afraid to be naked and raw and look for awkwardness, look for ugliness, look for flaws, look, you know, that's a real model of courage. What's a model of a courageous artist to you? And what do you think it takes to be courageous in art?
Well, it's interesting because you said, what did I expect when I met you? And the reason that I was so excited to meet you was because, like, I had just always been captivated. No matter where I saw you, I started to have this feeling where I was like, okay, that's the person who, like, I remember everything from, like, Wolf of Wall Street to Sicario to Walking Dead. Like, I would see you and I'd be like, oh, that's the person I'm drawn to because I can recognize that something really honest is happening right here. And, like, it would be like I'd be watching a movie from 2015 and suddenly it would be like I was in the 70s because you were just so, like, present and there. And so, but I was also surprised because I remember when my friend Eben started working with me, I was like, tell him he's my favorite actor. And when he was like, he's a really big fan, I was like, oh, what? Like, the idea that you would be watching it and connect to what it was about. But yes, then when I met you, I wasn't sure what I would experience. And I'd also had lots of experiences of, like, male actors who were not presenting as female, having a certain kind of ego around their work or what they did, or having to kind of, like mask it in this kind of machismo or that. But the thing is, when I met you, it was so clear to me that we were looking for the same thing, which is, like, that we loved doing it because we loved things that we could, that both scared us and that we could disappear into. And then when we worked together, I understood it even more because we both have this thing where even if something scares us, that makes us understand that we need to do it if it scares us in the right way.
Yep.
And also that our only goal within that isn't to, like, meet a larger expectation or contribute to some, like, way we think our body of work is supposed to look, but to just be there, deconstruct it, and do the most, the version of it that sort of, like, reflects the things that we have experienced in life that have challenged us, that have pained us. And so, like, in working with you, I understood even more deeply, like, the harmony between the way that we do things. Uh-huh. And I think that's always been my thing, is, like, if something scares me, if something gives me shame, I want to run towards and explore it and open it up.
Yeah.
Which was so, and that's why I knew that I wanted to write a part for you, and that's why I knew that it was going to be in a story that was this sort of kind of about shame and about the ways that we do things that run counter to our value system, and then how we kind of, like, relegate that to ourselves. And so, and those were the questions I was uniquely excited to explore with you because I knew that we were approaching them the same way.
When you were doing Girls and you were, you know, and you were just sort of, like, especially in the beginning, did that, like, can you talk a little bit about was there fear there?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the way that I sold it to myself was I was like, and I just said this to someone yesterday, I was like, oh, I mean, I know it's on HBO, but, like, how many people see that? Like 350? Like, it'll be, like, a little bit more than seeing a YouTube video that I put out, but, like, not as many as see anything else. Like, I thought it was going to be, like, maybe 300 like-minded women would see the show. Like the idea that there would become conversation about it, or then conversation about the conversation, was so outside. I didn't even let myself contemplate that.
Right.
And also because I think it's important to make
what work. If you had? Like, what if somebody said, hey, you know, this could be this?
I think I probably would have been like, no, that's impossible. And I also think if someone had really shown me what it was going to look like, I don't think like if someone had like a crystal ball and they'd been like, this is what it's going to look like when you put this work out. I don't know if I would have been, I don't know if I would have known to be scared because I wouldn't, because if they couldn't have said what this is what it's going to feel like. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I guess because my question is
but like, I was really terrified. And the part that I was terrified about wasn't necessarily like, oh, I'm going to be naked on television. It wasn't necessarily like, oh, people are going to see this character who is a reflection of certain parts of my life that have scared me. It was much more about like, I want to prove that I can do this. I don't want the people on set to feel like they're betting on the wrong person. It was much more about my fears were much more around interpersonal expectations and being able to achieve it artistically and creatively. Like I went in every day very afraid of failure, but afraid of failure on this almost like technical level.
And in the moment, right? Like the driver was like, if I'm asking that person to do it, I got to do it too, right? And
yes.
I guess my question is like, is courage, like do you feel like, you know, in order to like really achieve or to do something courageous, you almost have to ignore ramification. You almost have to ignore, because when I look at a firefighter who runs into a burning building, right? Like that person, you could say like, look, certain people are wired towards that. And it's something I talk about with artists all the time, because again, in the interconnectivity of all this, if you're talking to a special forces soldier, if you're talking to a pro fighter, I mean, look, walking into the ring, like every time you do it, you're fucking scared. Like every time you do it, but it's the people next to you. It's the people that you trained with. It's the people, it's for whatever reason you're doing it. Yep. It's like right there in the moment. And I've seen some of the most hardened people in the world that have like really, really, you know, really, really, had real time with like real violence, put a camera on their face and they completely wilt. And like, it's not about equating these things or whatever it is, but courage is courage. And I guess like, because I really think now in art, and something I want to get into a little bit later, but like, I think now in art, there's so many things at play that make you consider the ramifications, that make you consider, are you gonna offend this person, are you gonna offend this person, and can you truly be courageous if you're thinking about things that are gonna come down the line?
That's such a beautifully phrased question. Like when you were talking about like people who run into a burning building, like I remember being at summer camp when I was like 13 and every girl was jumping off of this really, really, like a, I don't know, like 100-foot rock into a pond.
Right.
And I was like, we could die. And they were all like, but it's fun. And I was like, we could die, you guys.
Right.
And like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I just remember feeling so ashamed because I left and everyone had jumped off the rock. And I'd been like, no way. Yeah. Like, that's just, I can't let go the way that you guys are and experience this idea that like, but if we hit the water the right way, it'll be fun. Because I can't stop thinking about it, but if we hit the water the wrong way, we'll be paralyzed.
Wow.
And, but in my creative life, I'm almost like pathologically unable to ignore ramifications. Or in like expressing myself, at times I've been pathologically unable to ignore ramifications. And so it's interesting when you say that thing about like courage is courage, but we all feel it in different ways. And something that was very, when you asked like what's a model of courage to me, you know, the thing that I always said when people were like, it's so brave for you to get naked on television, I was like, it's not brave to do something that doesn't scare you. And that never scared me. Just because it scares you and
totally.
You're watching.
Right.
But like, there's other things that really do scare me that are, you know the things that scare me. Disappointing people, going into a conversation and hurting someone, expressing myself and putting down a boundary. And so, and my father will sometimes be like, how are you? Like, I remember recently he was like, how are you able to like make a movie like Sharpstick and put it out and not care how people feel or get naked on television, and you literally just can't tell your friend how you feel? And I was like, it's just that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess for me, models of courage are like when I see somebody do something that is so like I watch a lot of Dateline just because it relaxes me.
Right.
And but I constantly will be watching these people who like, you know, experience something shocking in their life. They an intruder comes in their home, whatever. And they practice these acts of like wild bravery that come from almost like, you're like, where does that come from inside of you? Almost nowhere. And I was also thinking about that recently in relation to my mom, because like I was raised in a house of artists, so expressing yourself was a concept, but my mom was raised in a house of like, you know, post-World War II Jewish family where they were trying desperately to fit into this idea of like Norman Rockwell Americana. And my mom came out and was basically like goth.
Yeah.
And like couldn't not be goth.
Right.
And to me, I'm like, you're unbelievable. Like you were just like, you just busted out of that with no fear about telling everyone your life was going to look different than what they thought it was going to. So in a way, I just kind of followed this path that was already set out by my family. But I look at my mom or other, like specifically female artists, but tons of, I mean, I look at, you know, Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas, who announced in the, you know, just were publicly queer in the 1920s. Like these people who were able to express their identities despite every force that was oppressing them, to me, are unbelievable models of courage.
Of courage, yeah.
It's like James Baldwin, unbelievable model of courage. Yeah. Like someone who's able to just do it no matter, knowing full well that there's like a huge world of people who wish that they would be quiet or disappear or hide.
Perhaps with that, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's such a fucking weird word, I think, especially like, you know, now today, but like polarizing, right? Like people adore your work, people criticize your work, people are like scared by your work or put off by your work, whatever that is. And in a way, there's a lot of artists, at least a lot of the artists that like kind of I came up with, or especially in Russia, and sort of the formative people that I really trust, there's really nothing more you could aspire towards, is to really piss off a lot of fucking people and have people both adore you and have people fucking hate you. It seems to me that like you could describe a lot of your work that way, and like a lot of like your life that way, which is, and I think that there's a whole thing that I want to talk about like success and like ability and how it's like different for a man than it is for a woman, because I really genuinely, I've just like it, you know, I've come to like just really see so many examples of that.
Of course. And that with men, there's a certain way where like your success and your likability aren't in any way intertwined. And for women, it's like you're in some way supposed to apologize for your success by being continually likable. Like you're supposed to be like, thank you so much for allowing me here. I will behave in a way that pleases you.
Right.
And that isn't me saying that, you know, every response to me has been because of that, because you can never blame one factor. And I'm sure there have been plenty of legitimate responses to me. And like, I always welcome thoughtful, legitimate responses. But that thing of sort of demanding that like that women continue to please and entertain us, while almost being entertained by men running opposite to that, is something that I've witnessed forever. And it's so beautiful when I hear someone like, so it's beautiful when I see like a cis man call it out, because so many.
A what? A cis man?
A cis, CIS. Like that means you're the gender that you were assigned at birth.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm so excited that I can teach John
fucking
something.
Hey, you did.
But
dude,
by
yeah.
the way, you're right a cis man. So if anyone's ever like, hey, are you a cis man? You can say, yes, I am.
I thought you called me a cis. I was like, I ain't a fucking cis, dude. I'm like, I ain't going to go gift for somebody.
What if,
like
you,
a sissy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
what if I called you a sissy? That would
I guess
be
you
so,
could. I mean, I'd say,
No, you're not.
Yeah,
you're really not. But
that's
you are
cool.
Cis, which, and by the way, the moment that I explained that to my husband, it was like, you got it really quick. It took him about like 11, 12 minutes. Like he was just like, I'm a what? I'm a who? But because I'm so in my family, because my brother's trans, we're so steeped in conversation around gender. So I've just like started basically identifying everyone as either cis, trans, gender nonconforming. And like, then I forget that a lot of people are just walking around being like, I'm a dude.
Yeah, which
is also a totally fine thing to be.
Yeah. You know, when we got done shooting the movie that we did together, and again, like I can't really express enough, you know, how big of a, you know, before we were friends and before we got close, and, you know, just like how I, like, you know, again, like I was just a huge fucking admirer of yours, and I really
so
worshipped you and your work. Like I really did. And I was a fan, and you know, there's not, I don't have that many examples of in my, I have some that I'm super proud of that, like, just people I really admire that I got to work with them. But I don't know that, like,
I feel the exact same way about you, by the way. It's like an amazing thing to care about someone's work, see it, and then be able to intersect and make something together. And I really felt like we made something together.
For sure. And like, and I think, like, really, you know, became close and became safe with each other and comfortable with each other, which is kind of the ultimate. Because I don't know about you, I was going to ask you this with expectation. Like, I remember when you interviewed me for Interview Magazine, I remember being in Baltimore, and like, I just gotten back from Ride Along, and I was like in the studio, and I was talking to you, and I remember just being so disgusted with myself. Like, oh, afterwards I was like, that was the worst. Like, she probably thinks I'm so stupid. Like, that was so fun. And I go, that's like kind of my process with everything. It's like, I always feel like I'm fucking up. And I think that,
which
you know,
is one of the reasons you push yourself so hard. Like, I saw that on set, which is like when another actor would just be like, okay, we got that take and we're cool. Like, not, you do it in a way, I don't know how you do it, where you're also like sensitive to everyone around you, but you suggest things where you're like, but what if we took this 7 levels deeper? And that is, and clearly that's your process. And it was interesting when we were doing that interview, because you were beautifully cogent. I couldn't believe it. You'd just come back from like a police ride along research. You were like exhausted, hadn't slept, and just like shared like incredibly thoughtful, like held forth thoughtfully on so many issues. But I could tell that also, like, talking about yourself in that way is not your safe space.
Nah.
So you were like you kept trying to ask me questions, and I was like, I'm interviewing you, my man. I'm interviewing you, my man.
I think I have a big thing, especially with this profession that we that we do in this art that we chose, where, you know, I have, you know, I think we all come into it with big insecurities, and, you know, I did come into it as sort of like an athlete, and I think I'm worried people think I'm a brute, and I'm worried that people don't, you know, I'm worried about not being smart enough, and it's a big thing with me. And then coming in to that process with you, first, like, kind of our friendship starting to get to know each other, but then, like, after, like, actually, it is such a gift when, whether it's a hero of yours or not, but when a filmmaker who's running the show, and I think this is probably true in all professions, you know, whether you're a sergeant or a CEO or a coach or a captain, whatever it is, that can like really make you feel safe and welcome and wanted and comfortable and let you fly and let you feel 100 feet tall when you do it. And you really did that for me.
I'm so glad.
You know, so for me, you know, I remember when the thing was over, I put this thing up on Instagram that was basically just like, I love you so much thing. And it was just this, like, you know, express. And
I said to you, I was like, my friends have to be warned. Like, if you put me on Instagram, you're going to get some really gnarly comments.
And dude, the things that, and you also got to understand another part of my character and like my personality, as you know, it's like, once you're in my heart,
you're like deeply like, loyal.
Well, just not only that, like, I'm not like, If I heard somebody say something like that to you in real life, in real time, it would be like a big fucking problem. Like, yeah, a big fucking problem. And so for me,
sometimes when someone's mean to me, I'll have this thought where I'll be like, I just want to call John. Like, maybe he could just speak to them. And then I'm like, it's not realistic to have John speak to everybody who's mean to you. But well, it would
be. What's crazy is, like, so nice. You know, I ended, and you and I talked about it, but I ended up taking that post down. The reason why I took the post down is my wife was like, you are literally professing your love to another woman on Instagram. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And it's the only time, like, I don't even know, like, my biggest beef with my wife is like, I don't know whether she watches my movies. I don't think she's ever read it. Like, she's just like not into the whole
thing. She's so cool,
right? But I'm like, baby, like, you fucking paid attention to that? And she was like, I was like, oh fuck my, and I, you know, but I just,
it was, you know, so you, sweet, and but, I was like don't worry, I was like, Aaron, I have deep respect for you. You're literally a trauma nurse. I will kiss your toes.
but I guess like the question is like, you know how many people admire you and adore you, and you know that there's these other like, so you have this ability through your art, which really 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 affects people, which is like, I think, again, the ultimate, that's the ultimate thing that you can achieve as an artist, and it's the ultimate destination to being able to achieve the best that art can achieve, which is actually create change, yeah, make people think, challenge people, right?
Yeah.
But like, how does it, I want to know like how that feels. I want people to know how it feels. You know, how does it feel when people say those things about you? And I guess, Yeah, first just answer that.
Well, it's an amazing thing to be asked that directly, because so many people are like, what do you feel people are responding to? And to have someone just be like, what is your experience? What does that feel like? Because we know that also in this business that we're in, a lot of people think that because you've made the choice to make certain aspects of your life public, that in some way you've like dehumanized yourself and welcomed any kind of feedback. And my thing is like, we're all human beings. And it is that thing of like, if someone walked up to someone and spoke to them this way in the street, what would we, even if we disagreed, what would we do? And I've had like 3 people come up to me and say negative things.
Well, I was going to ask you, like on the street in real life, what is the absolute worst thing that, what your worst experience with somebody?
I remember it very distinctly. I was in the airport coming back from visiting Sacramento with Planned Parenthood. And I was with like a group, like a Planned Parenthood delegation. And it was after like, I'd made some joke years before that like if Trump was elected, I would move to Canada. Like everyone made that joke. I still come up in articles that are like celebrities who said they'd leave the country but are somehow still here. Right. And guys, I just want to let you know, I actually don't live in this country anymore. So I've satisfied the expectations. I've left America. For anyone who's concerned, I'm gone. But that being said, with only brief visits home to see John Bernthal.
There you go.
But it took me a while and I didn't go to Canada.
We're in Dubai right now.
Yeah, we're in Dubai and it's sick. Yeah. We're influencers.
Hot as fuck, but yeah.
And we're in Dubai.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But basically, this guy came up to me and he was like, move to Canada. And I was like, but he did it with like such a nasty sneer. Like hatred.
Like, dude definitely hasn't had sex in 25 years.
That was fully the energy. Yeah, he was like a low-level businessman who had not had sex in 25 years. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, like I couldn't even respond.
That didn't hurt.
Well, it was like what he said didn't hurt, but it was like the face, the energy, the look.
Yeah, the anger.
The anger. And then I get on my plane and I see him and I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to say? He's like 12 rows back or something. I'm like, am I going to say something? Am I not going to say something? And And I like did such, I mean, I was... You know, I was such a pussy. I was like, excuse me, sir. I just want to say that if you have a daughter, I hope that you have not taught her to speak to other people that way.
But right?
And like, that's all. And then he was like, I do have a daughter and I hope she doesn't grow up to be like you. And I was like, literally, like, I couldn't even think. I've been so not trained to respond to other people in that way. Like hatred wasn't something that was like invoked in my, like the most my parents ever said was like, they were mad at an art critic who made them feel sad. Like we don't respond to people that way. Yeah. And so I didn't know how, and I didn't know, I can't fight fire with fire because I literally don't have that. Like sometimes my husband will be like, express your anger. And I'm like, but it's not there. Yeah. Like he's like, you're allowed to be mad about this. And I'm like, maybe it's somewhere in me, but I can't access it. And the feeling that I have is like, I literally turn into like the 7th grade girl who didn't get invited to the birthday parties again.
Yeah.
And I think the hard thing about when I don't go on social media anymore, like I don't, someone else posts things on my accounts, because I realized seeing that stuff, you become inured to it. And then you suddenly are like living in a reality where reading a comment where someone calls you a fat whore is normal to you. And I don't want to be, I want to have kids, however they identify, gender, sexuality. I don't want to be a person. I want to have my spirit intact so I can show them that being spoken to that way isn't okay, that you can't speak to somebody that. And if I'm used to reading those comments.
Constantly inundated with that.
Inundated with that. You start to believe those things about yourself. You can't not. It reminds me of like when you're 24 and you have a shitty boyfriend and you think like, I can listen to what this guy's saying to me, about me. And also keep the part of myself intact that knows that I'm like a special gem that deserves love. You can't do that. And the thing that freaks me out is like, I know I can take it with comments like that. Mm-hmm. What freaks me out is that there's like 14-year-olds on the internet.
Who
are dealing with that same energy from their classmates.
Right. But also in real life are dealing with guys like that. Like that energy out there, that repressed anger.
150%.
And my question is for all those who voted for Donald Trump, or people who love Donald Trump, or people who consider themselves, I don't know what the hell that guy fucking, but who really consider them, like, do they, is that really behavior that they want to adhere to, like that, to have that kind of energy, to have that kind of repression, well, to have that, and to voice it to a woman.
He's almost like this, like collective. He's like the id has been collected into one person who's able to speak and act in a way that many, many people who do feel disenfranchised have dreamed of being able to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And then this guy comes in who apparently has all of the things that they could dream of, has the, and is also expressing himself with the kind of energy that's like been brewing in them maybe for their whole lives.
Sure.
And there he is. But like, but I don't think most of those people sit around their dinner table and encourage people to speak to each other
way.
And to behave this way. And it's been so interesting because like my husband is English and Peruvian, and it's like to try to explain to him, like, you know, every time there's a shooting, he goes, but why don't they just take all the guns away? Like he literally comes from a country where police officers are not patrolling the streets carrying guns.
Right.
So he's like, why don't they just take them away? Like what are background checks? Why don't you just take them away? The idea that right now there are women who are in a position where they can't get an abortion. And trying to explain to him, like, you literally have to go back to, like, the formation of America, how it was done, the reactive nature of it, to be able to explain to him why Donald Trump is there, what an incel is. Like, of course, I'm not trying to describe England as a perfect paradise. They're riddled with their own issues and complexities. But to try to explain to someone who has not been steeped in this culture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when he and I got together and he started, you know, getting occasional messages from people about me on his
like
page.
How does that feel for him?
I mean, the rage
of
and
course.
Pain that I see in him. Like the first time he got a comment like that, he cried just because
oh,
he
man.
Was like,
yeah.
He was like, how could someone talk about you that
right.
way? And then he wants to figure out how to respond. And
of course.
I have to say to him, don't respond.
You
like
yeah.
you can't get into a dialogue
yeah.
with like someone whose Instagram picture is a whatever. It used to
yeah.
be on Twitter, they'd be an egg if they
sure.
had, but now it's like everyone's picture is like, I don't know, like a picture of Slender Man or something. Like you don't want
yeah.
to be in that conversation. But
yeah.
for him, it's like, it's impossible for him because he's like, but I know you and you're here and I can't. And I know these things aren't true. And I also can't let somebody speak about my wife. And I have to just go like.
And I just wish people would understand that, you know, that we're,
yeah.
you know, we're husbands and wives and brothers and sisters and sons and daughters. And what's the opposite? Like, give me an example of out there in life. I mean, you talked about something earlier, but where somebody really inspired you or uplifted you or just made you feel so beautiful or great about what you do or just like, or inspired new art. Like, what's just a really positive or is there just too many?
That's a great, I mean, I love anytime whenever people are like, I'm sorry, I'm bothering you. I'm like, who doesn't want a compliment except
right.
John Bernthal? But I remember one time, like when I was sharing a lot about my health issues on Instagram and my mom would be like, why do you have to tell everybody about all of this gynecological stuff? And she was just like, my mom is like much more of like an elegance to her. And she's like, then my friends text me and they ask if you're okay. And I just don't want to deal with this. And then we were walking out of a doctor's appointment and this girl came up to me and she was like, because of you, I figured out that I have endometriosis. And like, she was like a young girl, 22. And she was like, you know, I always thought that like, you know, I would say that I had cramps and my family would just say to me, that's normal. And like right in front of me, she explained to me and like my mother was like, okay, I get it now. And to be able to have someone like,
wow.
like she didn't understand what a gift that was to me because
mm-hmm.
my mom was like, I was like, see, it's comforting for me because I get to meet people who are living in even though we're separated by our bodies and separated by our circumstances, we're sharing a reality. And also she got to see like why all of what she views as just like her favorite term, oversharing,
mm-hmm.
is might actually have like a connective purpose. And
mm-hmm.
that was, and I was also like, gotcha, mom.
There it is right there.
But like, do you have like, do you get anxious when people come up to you? Do you like it? What is your?
I mean, I've said this before. I think that you know when I was a kid, on my way back from a camp, I got in trouble, and I was on my way back from a camp with my dad, and from New Hampshire, and we stopped in Massachusetts at a diner, and we went to eat, and I was eating my cheeseburger, and I looked over and I saw Robert Parrish, and Robert Parrish. You know Robert Parrish yeah. Was the chief. He was the center for the Celtics. You know, Larry Bird Celtics.
And I don't know who he is, but I can history, imagine.
But you know, and that yes. you know where we came from. Like, you didn't see famous. I mean, and like that was like a guy I like grown up play, and he was yeah. like right there, and I was yeah. 11 or 10 or whatever it was.
Oh, it's so exciting!
And I was like, holy shit! I was like, Dad, it's Robert Parrish. It's Robert Parrish, and I couldn't believe that I was in the same space as him. Yeah. I said, I'm going to go get his autograph. And my dad's like, hey, man, leave that motherfucking guy alone. Just fucking sit here and eat your I go, Dad, I got to get his autograph. And he's like, leave him the fuck alone. And I'm just like, I couldn't. I stopped. Like, I love cheeseburgers. And my parents didn't really like let me drink too much Coke. I love Coke. And I was like ignoring my Coke.
So
I just
cute.
Wanted to fucking, I was like, he's there. And I was looking up, watching him eat, watching him do his thing. And my dad said, all right, here's the deal. When he gets up and he pays his check, take this little bar coaster. He got me a pen from the waitress. You can go over and ask him. He's done. So, say, sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Parrish, but could I have? So I saw him getting up, and he was just so big, and I was like, holy shit. I went over there, and I was like, you know, and like, I remember actually this thing in my head being like, try to like turn it on, kid, like be a little cute, you know, like, you know, because you're like 11 or 10, you're like kind
was
of a
he
kid,
nice
but you're
to
not.
You?
So I said, Mr. Parrish, can I get your autograph? And he just looked at me and said, go away, kid, just like that.
No.
And like,
I'm gonna cry.
Dude, it fucking, you know, when you feel like everything just like you like I didn't even that wasn't even within the realm of possibilities that
that
was gonna
sad,
happen
angry man
and I whatever it was and you know whatever it was no. you know for me
I went
it's
from
just
loving
like,
Robert Parrish to hating him in a matter of seconds.
my only point is that I realize that with every single person that comes up there is and now it's like a lot of it's like, hey, let me just get the picture, whatever, but number one, anybody who's like, hey, I really dig your work, or it did, you know, and the range of like, hey, this really affected me, or this, that, you know, that's such a gift and so beautiful. And but I also recognize that every single person that comes up, they're coming to you. They're open to
and
you.
And that like that little kid that you were, that they had to like gather their bravery and think about how to do it. And the fact that you have that awareness is why you're so
well. The other thing I say,
people.
And even what we're trying to do right here is I do also think that a lot of the people that come up to me, you know, for people that kind of like my stuff, it's construction workers and it's cops and it's soldiers. And it's so many times what I get is, hey, man, I've never done this before and I don't really do this kind of stupid bullshit, but can I get a picture with you? And I'm like, my man, come here. And like, I'm going to put my fucking arm. Like, yeah,
yes.
Dude, like, fuck yeah, you can. So, but you know, like.
I kiss everyone on the cheek whenever they ask for a picture. I'm just like, I don't know this person and they're about to get a kiss on the cheek. But I feel that way where it's like you want to give a feeling of like we're in it together mm-hmm. for a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. And like. And you know, there are times when I've been really down or I've been really worried about something. Somebody comes and I'm like, all right, man, fuck yeah, you know, like and so no, I've really only kind of had positive experiences with that, and not only just as somebody who like really cares about you and is you know protective of you of all my friends, as far as like criticism or stuff that's out there of you. Is there anything specifically that you really think is unfair? Do you really think there's anything that's warranted? Do you think that there's anything like, what do you say to that? Or do you just have to keep it moving? Like, how do you?
I think that, you know, I used to probably like when Girls was on, I used to probably spend more time cataloging because I'm like, I care a lot about taking things in. And if I'm in a, if I, there's something I need to learn, I care a lot about shifting my mentality. So whenever there was like a criticism that was around someone feeling unseen or like something that I said denied their reality, those are the things I want to take in and shift the way that I move. But the thing that's interesting, and I was just actually thinking about this yesterday, is like I can't remember so many of them now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like I think evidence of how like there's these things that we think will are so huge and will follow us around for the rest of our life. And it's not that they're not important, but I just, it's like now my, so much of that space has just filled up with like the energy to make things and the energy that I put into my private life. And that it just isn't like, there's not this like marquee with all of them listed on it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone asked me about them that the other day and I was like trying to remember and I was like, I can't remember.
Right.
And that to me is just evidence. Like I say to everyone who I know who's going through like a hard time or a time where they feel shame or is like, I know this feels like your whole reality right now,
right,
but like
I
literally
say it to my kids all the time.
these things that feel so all-encompassing, the way that probably right after Robert Parrish told you that you to go away, mm-hmm. you were like, I'm going to be stuck in this pit of sadness and shame for the rest of my life.
Then went back and ate my cheeseburger. Oh. My dad was like, you know what that is, kid? A fucking asshole. You know what I mean? I was like, you know, yeah,
that's
fair enough.
So
dude.
Important. Right? I saw Cindy Crawford in an elevator in fourth grade, and I was like, shaking. I remember like looking up, seeing her, being like, could it be her? And then I saw the mole and I was like, it is her. Yeah. And, like, squeezed my mom's hand and I was just like literally going apeshit inside myself. And then when we got out of the elevator, my mom was like, you just made her day. And I the whole way home was like, Mom, I'm gonna kill you. Like, I was gonna really play it cool and just tell people that I was near Cindy Crawford without acknowledging Cindy Crawford. Yeah. And then now I'm yeah, my mom really blew up my spot. But I think one of the benefits of people having seen me go through things publicly, both the way people respond to me and me sharing my own life experience through the work and through personal essays and through my writing, is that a lot of people who I know, when they're going through something that's like pretty life shifting and pretty rough, like will come to me and talk to me about it.
That's awesome.
And I really like that. Like, I really like being able to be present for people in moments where they're like, I don't know what my life is going to look like after this. Like, this is a moment of extreme pain, fear, transition. And the thing that I can now honestly say to people is, like, you will have moments where you literally think, like, I will not survive this. And then not only will you survive it, but your life will look like your life will be completely reoriented in a way that is so beautiful because of this. And again, that's so much of what our like movie is about these moments of extreme pain that you think are going to follow you for the rest of your life. First heartbreak, sexual shame, you know, marital discord, and the idea that like there actually is like a possibility that you can like experience all that and then be like broken open by it in a new and important way.
I mean, I guess I'd love to just get your kind of opinion. I mean, for lack of a better word, just people talk about like Hollywood and the wokeness and whatever that is right now. Because it seems to me, when I was just like really looking at it, that at times, figure out how to put this, but at times I feel like the folks that are about certain issues or who want certain things spend so much time poking holes in others who are basically making an argument for those same things.
I mean, I think about this a lot when I'm involved in any kind of like feminist organizing, which is like the amount of time that people spend sort of attacking other people's methods or modes of expression. And like, the one thing I'll say is like, I don't like anything about the Republican Party, but those motherfuckers step in line mm-hmm. and like get it done mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the way that they're getting it done together, mm-hmm. but sometimes I feel like, guys, we have to activate and we have to like it's literally like when you have like a van of kids who are all fighting with each other and you're like, do you want to get to this theme park or not?
Yeah.
You know, I'm of two minds because I think that the really beautiful thing about the internet is that it's created a space for people who feel marginalized, unseen, unheard to express themselves. And I think that self-expression and being allowed to express yourself and to be heard is an essential human right. Mm-hmm. And when people feel denied that, it can only cause problems. And I also always like when someone expresses their dissent with me in a way that's clear and thoughtful. That's being educated. But I think that there is a sense now of overwhelming fear people have around maybe like speaking certain truths, just truths that are truths to them, that it's like, that's never a good thing either when people are living in fear of or feel like they're being surveilled.
Right. I guess the question is like, do you feel, I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but like, do you feel like you could make Girls today?
No.
Again, if you can sort of achieve the greatest level that art can, which is like creating real cultural change, from Stanley Kubrick to Jimi Hendrix to Maya Angelou, look at these artists, right? Yeah. If they were being sort of like funded or represented by or surrounded by groups of people that would only sort of participate in their art if beforehand they checked every single box that they would not offend X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Could they ever have made that art, and could they ever have achieved cultural change?
Well, most of the work that I care about couldn't be made today. And I think that can be kind of like the hallmark of a great work of art, is that it couldn't be made today. Right. Like all of the movies of the 70s that inspired Chirpstick couldn't be made today, because there would be people who would be breaking down the sexual politics and breaking down who was allowed to say what, and who, you know, so many of my favorite female characters of all time who are thorny and complicated and sexually powerful were created by male filmmakers who were also writing male characters who represented certain really like dark, you know, Philip Roth is probably my favorite novelist of all time. Yeah. And like, when I say that, people are like, excuse me, like those, all his characters do is hate women. And I'm like, but you know what? He was representing something that was so fucking true.
Yep.
And he was the only one of the men in the 60s and 70s who was willing to be like, I was raised to hate women. This is what it looks like inside of my being. And so even though the things that he did, like the first time I read Goodbye Columbus, I was very uncomfortable, but I was uncomfortable because I knew that I was seeing something true. And it was almost like I was like looking at an X-ray of the minds of all of the boys around me. But I was so grateful for that.
If you don't see it, how are you going to spark the conversation? How are you going to ever affect change? And I guess, like, so is it, do you think it's part and parcel to creating good art now, going back to what we said, to absolutely ignore ramification? Do you think it's possible to make art today ignoring ramification?
I think that it's hard. I mean, I think our experience making
courageous.
Sharpstick was as close as you can get, because it was like an independently funded small production where we weren't having to sort of like adhere to studio system, making sure that we were doing everything exactly right to urge conversation in the proper direction. And that was what was exciting, and that was what was scary about it. And of course, when I make my work, I try to look at, like, I want people to feel the right things and feel, and I want the anxieties that it stokes to be the correct ones. But I also recognize that at a certain point, I just take my hands off the wheel and let it go, because it's like a very let go and let God. Like, it's the same way, like, I see you in a performance, like, there's a moment where it's like you have a plan, you have ideas, and then it's just like you kind of step outside yourself and then also step more into yourself and just kind of go wild. You have to have that moment for it to feel alive.
I think so.
And like, our job was to like be there when it was made, do it in the most thoughtful way we could, and then people's responses to it, and then responding to their responses to it, like, that's for them.
Absolutely. And it's like what you're talking about, burning, going in the burning building. Well, if he's going, I'm going.
Yeah.
If she's going, I'm going. Like, you got to do it for today. And I guess what I see is, like, when I think about folks that I'm, you know, a fan of and listen, like, when I think of Joe Rogan, or I think of Dave Chappelle, or I think of, I guess, like, you know, I feel like sometimes when it's sort of against the status quo of liberal Hollywood, if you can say, hey, I'm going into this and I don't care who this offends, I'm fucking making something, I'm saying something, I'm telling this joke. But it's just weird that, like, then we don't do that. It's not the same sort of on the other side. It's looked at it as something different.
Like, I think the only time that I mean, I don't ever consider it my place to get, I get offended by interpersonal interactions, but like with art, I respect it. Certain like works of art, that if people are like, that made me feel unsafe, or that made me feel scared, or that made me feel like it promoted ideas that are going to be threatening to me. Mm-hmm. I also think people need to be allowed to say that. Like, the thing I don't like seeing is when artists say something that is clearly is designed to possibly offend someone, and then they also whine about the response to them, because it's like, you know what you did. And like, I'm not going to whine about the response to me.
Yeah.
The response to me is at times literally violent.
Yeah.
So why are you whining about the response to you? Which is people saying that they feel that what you said was violent. It's like this real dish it out but can't take it thing that I think is like fucking loser behavior. And it's like, that to me is the thing. And by the way, I feel like when I see it, it almost always comes from dudes who are used to getting a certain response of like fandom. And then when they get like one kerfuffle, they're like, you can't believe
and
what's
it's
happening
so
to me.
Fucking soft, dude. It's so soft.
That's
and, like, don't
the
you
thing.
Want that? Like, don't you like want
to
invoke?
Well, it seems
like, wanna,
they do.
You know?
It seems like they do. So then it's like the and so that's the thing. Like, the whining about the response and the attacking liberalism. I'm like, you did it, and now you have to. That's always been my take with my work. Is like, I did it. I have to receive it.
Mm-hmm. But it's but attacking liberal. But I feel like it's a lot of liberals who are attacking.
It's all so like. It's also interesting because now, not to keep being like, I don't live in this country. Like, I sound like I'm like 90s Madonna. I'm like, I don't live in this country. But I don't live in this country. I read the Times at the end of the day, but I'm ashamed to say that I often just like go right to the movie reviews. There's a lot that I'm missing. Mm-hmm. And so then I come and I'm like, this is the most snake eating its tail kind of circular.
Yeah, it's a mess.
Like, it's not just men, because it's fascinating to me to see someone like J.K. Rowling say things that make so many of her young readers feel so dehumanized, and then literally like take up arms as if people's responses to her are in some way a violation, when she is, you know, when her work was like a guiding light for so many young people who were kind of trying to understand their gender. And then she says things that are so not affirming to them. But I do think that, like, if we could all step outside of this reacting to the reaction to the reaction, it, but like, I mean, Twitter, I mean, you know, like, you're a great tweeter. Every time I go to your Twitter, I'm like, this is, your tweets are so funny. And you have like, I feel like you have such a clear Twitter voice, which is very hard to have. Like, you're very yourself in that medium.
Shit. I put no effort into it.
I think it's amazing. And I also love how you're always like tweeting something that I have no understanding of, which is like a chunk of a baseball game. And I like can't understand what you're saying. And then it'll be like a pit bull doing something incredibly sweet. And it'll be like, this is why we're alive. And I'm like, I love this man.
Oh, right on. Thanks, LD.
Someone was like, John's performance in that scene where you find out he's cheating, and Christine started going, it's baby time, baby time, baby time, and singing your baby time song. And we were like, it's our song now. It's baby time, baby time, baby time, baby time. And every time I see a baby, I'm like, it's baby time.
That's hilarious.
Your song that you wrote, which is in the movie, Baby Time.
That was my dad's song. It's shower time, shower time, shower, shower, shower time, shower time. And I just remember my dad, like, bucking. You know, like, my parents were very naked. You know what I mean? Which is very crazy. Like,
honestly,
my kids, and I'm very naked, but my kids are, like, disgusted by naked. Look, there's not enough nakedism in our house. And my kids are, like,
out
dad. Like,
because other kids at school were, like, I've never seen my parents naked. And, like, you know, my parents were, like, getting skinny dipping with their friends, and I would go and see, like, a bunch of adults jumping into the water naked. And I remember, not to only talk about summer camp, but I know we both went to summer camp, that, like, there was this night where we were in our bunk and we heard laughing, and we looked out and all the counselors were skinny dipping, like, off the dock, and all the other kids were, like, scandalized. And I was like, that's what adults do. Like, they get drunk and they jump in the water naked. Like, you guys.
My boys went to my summer camp last year. But, you know, when I was a kid growing up, it was mandatory naked polar bear. So, like, you would wake up to Revelry, do your morning exercise.
Revelry.
They'd say, get in the lake. And you would stand in a line, buck-ass naked. And the counselors, so, like, I had nothing going on. Like, I was, like, bear down there. But you'd see, like, counselors with, like, full, like, you know, bushes and, massive penises. And it was every day. It was mandatory. And I told my kids that. And it was, like... You know, they were like horrified, because now you're not allowed to do it. Like, you all have to wear clothes.
Yeah, of course.
But like that was something.
Oh, I mean, just you saying Revelry brings back such memories of being awoken.
You co-ed?
Revelry. No, I was all girls.
All girls.
Were you all boys?
All boys.
Yeah. I feel like all girls camp, even though I hated it, I went for 4 years, and every summer I'd be like, I'm never going back there.
Yeah.
But it was like the most formative experience of my life. Like,
very important.
Extremely important.
Helps you get through shit. Because even when you don't want to be there, you can't get out of it, and there's nothing you can do.
Oh, I would like call my parents. The one call that you had a week was me calling my parents saying, like, please come get me. I can't live like this.
Yeah.
And like me going to the infirmary like 4 times a week, being like, I think I'm stuck by a bee. And everyone was like, what the fuck is up with this girl? But
everyone else having so much fun.
Oh, everyone was like living with deep freedom. And I was like, are you kidding? We're supposed to all like pee in that shack. Like, I could not handle it. But honestly, like I still remember this night where like we went camping, and like my friend Emily and I were idiots, and we forgot to put like the guard over our whatever, the tarp over our tent, and we woke up like literally like soaked to the bone in like a pile of mud, and just me being like, I don't think I can summon the human will to get through what this feels like.
Yeah.
And then, like, walking in my cold, muddy pajamas for the whole day up a mountain.
Yeah.
But, like, that, like, there were moments in my adult life where I was like, okay, I'm walking up the mountain in my muddy pajamas.
That's
like, I had to do it. And I went to all girls green and white camp because my mom and her sisters went. And, like, she was like, this is what we did.
And you had to go, right? Like, you didn't, you're like, I don't want to go, but you had to go.
Yeah. I didn't want to go when I was 11. I spent the whole year crying about it. Finally, my mom was like, okay, you can have one. It was like I got a pardon from my sentence.
Yeah.
And then she was sending me when I was 12.
Yeah.
And then when I was 12, it was like, it's on, bitch.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember getting dropped off and like my mom, my dad was like crying and my mom was like, bye. Yeah. And like then, and because she had to go for 8 weeks. Well, her parents like took a tour of Europe.
Yeah.
That was like what Jewish people in the Long Island in the 50s did, was like drop their kids and be like, enjoy them.
Yeah.
We will check in never.
Yeah.
But like, and of course my dad like, every week during when it was he was allowed to call me, it was like he was the first parent on the phone.
Yeah.
I still have these long, ornate letters that he wrote me. I have found a letter recently where I wrote to my dad being like, I can't figure out if I need deodorant because I can't tell if I have BO or if I hugged Katie and her BO rubbed off on me. And my dad wrote back, usually BO doesn't transfer. If you feel like you need it, you should probably get it. But get deodorant that is not antiperspirant because that can block your glands. Like,
you
my
go.
Dad was, like, in it with me on a day-to-day basis.
I love it.
And I remember my brother writing to me, like, little, being like, Dear Lena, I am having a lot of fun without you here. I hope you do not come back. Like, that. That's, like, the tenderest thing that I can think of now.
Yeah, yeah. Growing up in the house that you did and having artists for parents, and it's like your parents are like real deal New York, you know, tried and true artists. And I guess my question again in terms of like connectivity, and what specifically did you learn from your parents about integrity, success, work ethic, and love? And you can go one by one, or you can go, but like, you know.
Integrity, success, work ethic, and love. Well,
yeah, however you want to answer that.
I love that question. And I think, you know, the thing I was always trying to explain to people, which was hard for them to maybe understand when I first started working, was like, my model for expressing yourself was like the model that was like used in like the downtown New York art world. So the people who like inspired me the most were often like female performance artists like Linda Banglis, Andrea Fraser, like these women who were doing really complicated and very confrontational stuff. There was like a different model for how your career could look and a different model for, I guess, quote unquote, bravery. And I feel really lucky that as a kid, like my parents were actually very protective and quite strict, but there was no, like I remember my dad's rules were like, there's no book you can't buy unless it's trash. And there's no movie that you can't watch. And there was like an endless appetite for consuming things and no sense that like there were things that I couldn't consume because they were wrong.
Right.
And that I think.
Or dangerous.
Or dangerous.
Yeah. Or dangerous maybe was a good thing.
Well, my dad always said, he was always like, there's no bad thoughts, only bad actions. So like if you take in someone's work, that's their thoughts. And it's okay as long as you understand how to like how to process that and how to express it. And so we had a lot of like, we watched a lot, had conversations about what we watched. But I think in terms of integrity, like the biggest thing is like my parents always, you know, like they have a really interesting careers, but they always made the work that they wanted to make. Like they were never directing their work towards what they thought art collectors were interested in, what they thought museums were interested in. Like they were very, very focused on their own creative development in this way that, and also we were allowed to witness it because their studios, we lived on the fourth floor and their studios were on the second floor of our building. So it was like, there was a lot of time that we spent sort of parallel playing as our parents made things where, and that was like, I was just talking about it with my brother the other day. We were like, that was like some of the best time we had with our parents was actually while they were making their work. And we were just sort of like sitting there in what my dad called our office. We had like a little area with like two little desks where we would just like sit and do whatever we were doing. Or like I would go down to my mom's studio while she worked. And like, I remember on our like first Mac, like type my novel like this, like right next to where my mom was working. And then I think in terms of success, the thing that my parents valued and then the thing that they imbued into me is like my parents have never been proud of me because I achieved anything that resembled celebrity. Like mm-hmm. if anything, that's a part of what I do that they're allergic to.
Yep.
What they're proud of is when they feel like I've made something that is honest, clear, expresses something new. And they're really, and I think they're very clear when they see my work, when they think that that's something that I've done. Like when they saw Sharpstick and they really loved it, understood it, but also had questions, like that to me felt like a success. And that's because that's what they taught me. And then like in terms of hard work, like the thing that they also did was like every day they went into their studios, whether they were inspired or whether they weren't inspired. It wasn't like they were waiting for the muse to hit them. They were doing it because it's their job, and they managed to find a way to make creativity a job. Mm-hmm. And also I really saw that they were like having to run their lives like a small business. So I also saw like the ins and outs of what that looked like and the moments that it was interesting and the moments it was challenging. And then like the love portion was like, my parents really made it clear that there was nothing that we could do or say that meant that like we were no longer going to be worthy of their love. Like, I think that was the thing that they were always pushing back against, was like in the families that they came from, which were both very different, there was an idea that you needed to like fit into some specific model they had of how a person should look, act, behave. And my parents, like, they expressed to me what they thought about what I was doing. They told me when they thought I was making mistakes. They told me when they thought I was sort of being true to myself, but I never, there was never a moment, and we have big fights and we have big, you know, like big love equals big fights, as you know, but we have, and we definitely came from the kind of family where people like said what they thought, screamed in each other's faces, but there has never been in my whole life, no matter how people have responded to me, a moment where I thought my parents' love was like contingent on me pleasing them, on me showing them that I was worthy. And like, if I can take one thing away from my parents that I do from my kids, and I see you with your kids and you have this in spades, it's like this sense that like whatever it is that you do, like I may let you know if I think that it, you need to steer it the other way, but like the love is not a question.
Yeah, it's not a question. Is there anything intrinsically like hard or difficult that you wish you would change about growing up with artists' parents?
I think definitely there were moments. The only things that I experienced as a kid were like sometimes people misunderstanding specifically my dad's work because it's very like graphic and specific, and sort of having to defend what seemed completely normal to me, which is like having to have people understand that like you can make really complicated thorny work and still be like a cozy and pretty strict dad. And so I remember taking a friend to my dad's opening when we were in like fourth grade, and he had made this picture where like a man had like a penis coming out of his forehead that was like shooting, you know, what penises shoot. And yeah. My friend saw it, and I just started, my mom said, I started going, it's a gun, it's a gun, it's a gun. Cause I was just like in a hot panic. Yeah. And then my mom was like, it's not better if it's a gun.
Right.
Like, it's actually worse, but I just needed. It's so funny. I remember at school the next day, like, Lena's dad paints penises. And I was like, it was a gun. But I think like, and definitely there were moments where my brother would argue like, and he's written about this, that we were definitely exposed to like a sense of sort of like the competitive nature of people trying to broadcast their parents' success in New York and whatever. But like now that I'm grown up and away from all of that, I just feel like so grateful.
Yeah.
And when I go home to them, you know, we have this property where they have a house and they have their studios and I have a house. And when I go home to them, it's just like, I feel so lucky that like I walk into their studios to say hello in the morning. We're surrounded by their work from over the last 50 years. Wow. And like, I just feel so lucky that that is my home.
Mm-hmm.
We grew up going to this marina in Connecticut, which is near where we had a summer house. And like it was like a family owned business. It was like the grandparents had their kids who opened the marina, and the kids worked there during the summer. And, you know, we would go down there and hang out and get hamburgers and talk to them. And I remember kind of realizing like, oh, this is the same deal.
Same shit, yeah.
Like you guys all do this together. Mm-hmm. This boy likes heavy metal and he's reacting against his dad, but he's still helping sell fishing lures. And like this girl actually thinks it's really fun and she's excited to be behind the register, and they'll swap places at some point, and someday it will belong to one of them. The other one will be resistant to it. Like that is the same.
And perhaps the quality of how good they care for the boats at the marina, or the way that they treat the customers, or like, is so much more important than whether it's the biggest marina in Connecticut or whether it's like right?
Exactly,
and
right.
And I think that is such a thing that if there's anything I want for people to take, that is like, that is the goal. And I think the problem with the way that people look at Hollywood, it's like, these motherfuckers will sell their soul. Like they'll do whatever it takes to get, and there are so many, of course that exists.
But there's also so many people like you, like, I know you, and I know that your integrity, your relationship to your family, your relationship to your friends is like 8 rungs above the next like move that you're going to make in your career.
For sure.
And I see that a lot. And like in the art world, I saw people who were like, you know, like turning into sales monsters, and then people who were also staying really close to themselves. And I'm sure that it's the same with the marinas. Like, as you said, like the person who starts the super marina and starts selling yachts, and the person who like just wants to keep this specific thing alive. Mm-hmm. And I do think, like, you know, of course there are problems. There are people in Hollywood who are complaining about things that like don't matter to anyone else because everyone else is experiencing like a country in decay. But there's also, as you said, like ways we can all just be reflecting each other's experience and recognize that like every single day we're like Taylor Page, who's in our movie, was like saying to me, she just loves to be like, it's really hard to be a human. Like, it's really hard to be human. And we're all doing the best work, making the best work of it that we can. Like, I remember saying to my dad, like just last week, he was like yelling at me because he thought I was mishandling something in my own life. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, I'm doing the best I can. And he was like, well, that's a given, sweetheart. You're always doing the best you can. And I was like, oh yeah.
That's beautiful.
It really helped me.
I love that. Yeah. Well, look, I love you. I appreciate you doing this.
You.
I love that you had me in your movie, Sharp Stick. It's coming
out
soon.
I'm so excited. It's coming out this week.
Really,
and I'm
proud of it.
I'm really proud of your, you really brought something to it that I never could have conceived. Yeah. And I'm so lucky. And I want to make a million things with you forever.
Back at you.
But don't post about me on your Instagram because you're going to get in trouble.
No, stop all that shit.
You have a really beautiful relationship to women. Like, you have one of the healthiest relationships to women of any cis straight man that I've ever met. Do you think that that comes from, like, I know you have a fucking amazing mother. I mean, but do you think, like, what do you think that is?
That's,
I think you
question.
Experience women as people. That's one
of
the things.
Yeah, I don't look at any, I mean, it really is part, I think, a big thing of kind of, like, where I grew up and how I grew up. It was so ultimately and completely, and I think sublimely diverse where I grew up and how we grew up, that we were really, really, and in our home was so diverse that we were really inundated with just, like, you judge people for the look in their eye, content of their character, how they roll, whether they mean what they say and say what they mean, and, like, it ends there. I think that being said, you know, two things. You know, I do think that there is an unmistakable truth about gender. And I know it's like gender is like a, but I do think that there is a truth about gender, that there are certain things that, you know, people who are born being a man physically are in a certain place physically in terms of like how they carry themselves, in terms of fit, where that is different from women. And I do think that I do have this like guttural and utteral like intolerance for people that disrespect women, and maybe that's looked at as like chauvinist, or maybe that's looked at like but it is for
it
me
makes me feel safe.
But look, for me, there's like there's a few women in my life you know, besides people that I'm related to, but you know, that are the most powerful forces in my life, besides you know, my wife and my mom and but you know, like, you know, a woman like really like saved my life, and she like you know, like changed everything about me, gave me this gift, and like for me, I don't know, I just like I kind of bow down, you know, like I see wisdom, I see grace, I see an ability that I like. I'm a guy's guy. Yeah. I have such close relationships with men. I get, you know, but there's something that is just so that's always been like, wow. You
and
know?
I don't think it's chauvinist, because whenever you make me feel protected, you don't make me feel like I'm not capable of protecting myself.
Nah.
And that's the thing. That's the difference, is like when a guy's like, I'll fucking handle it for you. Yeah. You're like, okay. Bruh.
Yeah.
But like with you, it's like you make me feel like I can handle it because of your faith in me.
Just allow me.
And that's the most beautiful thing.
I hope so. I mean, but you know, but then there's also, you know, like I mean, like people I think just people are people, and I don't you know.
I love you to the moon.
I love you too. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
I'll see you tonight.
I really love your tiny. Is that a tiny boxing glove you're wearing?
It is, yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, you like it?
Yeah, I love it.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on. Thank you, Albie.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.